Welcome to a coffee room chat in ENT. This is the second series of podcasts where experts in the field discuss their experience in the management of important and challenging aspects of ENT surgery. This is a collaboration between ENT UK and the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh, and it's presented and produced by me, James Tyson, an ENT surgeon from Cambridge and the director of e-learning for ENT UK, and of course with the help of the team at the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh.
Our sixth episode was put together with the help of the British Society of Otology and features Aaron Iyer and Owen Judd discussing the use of lasers and angled endoscopes in endoscopic ear surgery. So Mr. Aaron Iyer is a consultant otologist at University Hospital Monklands. Professor Owen Judd is a consultant otologist at Royal Derby Hospital. Both of them have a particular interest and expertise in endoscopic ear surgery. So they're going to discuss the use of lasers in middle ear surgery, and particularly the use of angled endoscopes with respect to endoscopic ear surgery.
Owen, you have shown particular techniques for use of laser in endoscopic ear surgery. So can you tell me what laser do you use?
So I tend to use the KTP laser. So laser stands for light amplification from stimulated emission of radiation. And it's a method by which light can be amplified and can create heat. The laser that I use is the potassium titanyl phosphate, or the KTP laser. That has a short wavelength, so its wavelength is about 532 to about 585 nanometers. And primarily it's a green laser light. So the idea of the way the laser works is it amplifies the light frequency at that particular wavelength, which creates significant amounts of heat. So it amplifies the energy of that light. And the way lasers tend to work is they get predominantly absorbed by colours that are opposite the colour of the laser in the colour wheel, as you can imagine it. So the green laser light of the KTP laser is predominantly absorbed by red pigment, so particularly haemoglobin. Now, the way you can use it is by using the laser at a particular distance from the object that you're firing the laser onto. It will either get absorbed by red pigment. So, for example, it can be used for small blood vessels to coagulate the blood within those vessels by heating it up. But also, if you actually touch the laser fiber very close to the object of interest, it will actually cause burning. So it will actually evaporate the tissue. So in the ear, it's really effective for both coagulating blood vessels and slowing down bleeding, but it's also extremely good at removing and vaporizing cholesteatoma, and also for cutting through tissue such as the stapedius tendon or even the stapes superstructure.
So what is the current, you obviously use a fiber with a laser, mm-hmm. and what is the setting that you use for cholesteatoma?
So for cholesteatoma, I use the laser at 1 watt, and I use a continuous wave. So you can set lasers to either produce pulses of energy in anything from a few milliseconds up to a second or so at a time, or you can set it as a continuous wave, which means when you depress the pedal, the laser continually fires until you let go of the pedal. For firing through delicate structures such as stapedius tendon or even the stapes superstructure for stapes surgery, and I think you'll talk about that shortly, you can actually contact the tissue itself with the laser fiber and use a pulse, so just a single shot. But for cholesteatoma, I tend to use continuous waves, so I can paint a mastoid cavity, for example, with the laser light, which will vaporize and destroy any cells of cholesteatoma that might be left behind after removing the vast majority and the bulk of the disease. And it can also be used on the ossicular chain to remove isolated islands of cholesteatoma from the bone itself, leaving the ossicular chain intact in those situations.
Okay, that's very good summary of the use of lasers. The other thing that I find it useful is, even if you're doing an endoscopic combined approach, the area where I find it very difficult to remove is the medial surface of the adductors. or the undersurface of the attic where, you know, the bone is still remaining. So these days what I do is I go from the cortical cavity with a 3 millimeter scope and inspect that area and use a laser fiber to vaporize those areas. So I got a video I'll show you later. But the other thing is that you showed a very interesting presentation on the use of this laser for the retraction pockets, so that, you know, obviously prevention is better than cure and cholesteatoma is from the retraction pocket. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. I mean, one thing I've noticed over years of using laser in other areas is that when laser light heats up tissue, it causes the collagen fibers within that tissue to contract. That's how it's used aesthetically, for example, in order to tighten skin of the face, for example. So I utilized laser, and one procedure that I did for cholesteatoma, I noticed that the laser light actually caused contraction of the tympanic remnant of the tympanic membrane. And so I developed that technique to actually use on retraction pockets. So it's very, very useful for grade 2, grade 3 retraction pockets when the pocket is not adherent to the promontory or not adherent to the ossicular chain and can actually be blown out very easily by the patient. In those situations, as we all know, if the retraction pockets are left untreated, particularly with negative middle ear pressure, they'll gradually get deeper and eventually adhere themselves onto the ossicular chain or even onto the promontory. So what laser can do in those situations in retraction pockets that are still lateralizable, so to speak, is by heating up the tissue, heating up the tympanic membrane, will cause the collagen fibers in the fibrous layer in the center to contract and to tighten, and that actually tightens up the retraction pocket and can actually reduce the retraction pocket, and in some cases obliterate it completely. They just return back to a normal tympanic membrane, and I've shown this with a number of cases, and it's very effective.
And again, you know, do you use a pulsed laser or a continuous, in what setting?
So for that particular technique, I use a pulse laser. Again, I use 1 watt, but I defocus the beam. So as I said, if you have a focused beam, it will cause coagulation of any blood vessels, but also heating up the tissue. Whereas if you touch the fiber onto the tissue, it will cause a burn. It will actually essentially cause a hole in the tympanic membrane. So by holding the fiber very slightly further away from the tympanic membrane so that your aiming beam is not perfectly focused, is a little bit dissipated, that causes a degree of heating but reduces the risk of causing a burn through the tympanic membrane. And then I'll use individual pulses across the width of the retraction pocket, and one can often see the retraction pocket tightening before your very eyes.
Okay, so the defocusing is done by distance, not by any other adjustments. Okay.
Yeah. So literally just as close as you put the fiber towards the tympanic membrane.
Okay. And the other thing is that, you know, do you use the aiming beam when you're doing this kind of procedures? Because in my case, I find that it produces a bit of, you know, distraction and on the screen because we don't have a filter.
Yeah, I mean, that is a problem with the lasers, with the use of endoscopic ear surgeries. Of course, when we use laser with the microscope, the microscopes have inbuilt filters, meaning that you can look down the microscope and see exactly what you're doing, and the laser light doesn't reflect back. The problem with using it with an endoscope is an endoscope, as yet, don't have filters that are manufactured by the laser manufacturers that fit the endoscopes. And hence you do get a flashback from the laser when you're using it. So you still have to wear goggles. However, what I can find is that using the aiming beam allows me to be sure that I've defocused the beam of the laser before I fire it.
Okay. Because I don't use it for that particular function, maybe that is why I switch the aiming beam off. So that because most of the procedures are done with very near or touching the structures. So, but if you're using this for this particular mode, maybe you have to keep it further away and, you know, but I am in the process of getting more details from my friend Adrian James in Toronto, where he has got a filter. Mm-hmm. And but I'm finding it difficult to get that in the UK. But if it is available, the other thing is that I use either pulsed or continuous, like you said. For stapes surgery, I use 2 watt in pulses or 1 watt in pulse for the foot plate and the prosthesis. But for the cholesteatoma surgery, I use a continuous laser, either 2 watt or 1 watt. If it is the areas to avoid are near the facial nerve or in a very empty foot plate. But all other areas where, if, for example, there is no dehiscence of the lateral canal or something, you will be able to use without any major problem. But beware of the thermal sort of, you know, and potential for thermal damage if you're using near the lateral canal. I switch off the aiming beam because I find it very distracting on the screen. And I use also a suction nearby so that the smoke can be extracted. And I've never had any use of carbon dioxide laser because I don't have a carbon dioxide laser with the fiber. That's fine. I think we'll now move on to the use of the angle scopes. What I normally use is most of the cases I do with the 0-degree scope, 3 millimeter, 14 centimeter. And the difficult to access areas such as sinus tympani and facial recess, sometimes, you know, we may have to use 45-degree scope. 30-degree scope is okay up to a limit, but I find that it's not giving me as much sort of access to those areas. But the other thing, a little bit about the instrument itself, it's very important to have at least a 3 CCD chip camera system. Most of the hospitals in the UK will have it, but I'm surprised that some hospitals still are finding it difficult to get them. Of course, if you have 4K UHD, you know, we do have it. It's great, good view. And the other thing is that, you know, I keep the light intensity minimum of 10% and then increase it if necessary. We have done a study. You can see this is published in Clinical Otolaryngology. I would never encourage anybody to start doing this as a first thing, but use 0 degree first, 45 degree very occasionally from the same side. Maybe practice on cadavers or something before you do this, okay, because it can be dangerous. So sinus tympani can be difficult to visualize. And in second look surgery, I have to have a very meticulous approach because there can be small amounts of residual cholesteatoma. You need to irrigate and wash off the blood. In my case, I find that. And I use 45 degree in these cases from the same side first. And if it is too deep, stand on the opposite side and then do it. So what is your experience in use of angled endoscopes?
So so I was introduced to endoscopic ear surgery initially by David Pothier, the great Dave Pothier, when we were registrars together in the Southwest. And then I left it for a long period of time in the rotation in the East Midlands, where all the consultants in that region do microscopic approach. So I focused on that. And then back in, I think it was 2013, 2014, when you yourself set up the first endoscopic ear surgery course in the UK up in Glasgow, I came up and came on that course. And it was there that I was introduced to using angle scopes, as well as the 0-degree scopes, which I'd always used previously. And Dave, of course, was one of the faculty on that course. And since then, I've not turned back, really. I use the endoscope pretty much for all my ear surgery. And I also have now experience of using the angle scopes. And for those viewing this podcast, I can't encourage enough the use of angle scopes. It helps significantly. As you know, one of the big advantages of endoscopic surgery is getting a much, much better view of the middle ear than you do with the microscope, and also significantly less tissue destruction. We're using the microscope, you have to remove any bone that's between you and the cholesteatoma in order to simply view it, let alone remove it. But of course, with the endoscope, you can see a lot of tissue without having to remove the healthy bone. And then with angle scopes, you could even see round corners even better than you can with the 0-degree scope in order to remove disease. And as you, Aaron, have just demonstrated, using superangle scopes such as 45 degree, you can see into even the deepest of sinus tympani to remove the disease. So I use a Norton 30-degree scope and my workhorses really for endoscopic ear surgery for all aspects. And even in cases where cholesteatoma is going deep into the towards the mastoid tip, you can actually see it really effectively with even a 0-degree in some cases, but certainly a 30-degree scope. And we have access to one 45-degree scope, which inevitably is usually broken or is being cleaned, so I don't always get to use it. But when I do use it, it's the view is significantly superior. And I've had a couple of cases which, just as you've mentioned about standing on the opposite side of the patient, which again is something I've learned from yourself, to actually view and to see underneath the facial nerve and deep into the sinus tympani. So it's extremely effective, and the amount of healthy tissue destruction that we would normally have to undertake in order to reach cholesteatoma in those areas is abolished by using the endoscopes, the angle scopes, meaning, of course, that the patients are better off. They don't have destruction of healthy tissue, and they're likely to recover more rapidly.
Do you have any advice about, for example, when you're starting off, how to avoid any dangers when you're using the angled endoscope?
So the key with using an angle scope is, of course, is to just bear in mind all of the time that you're always looking around a corner. And I tend to use the bottom part of the screen. So if this is my endoscopic screen, I always follow the very lowest part of the screen as the way forward. If you do what you do with a 0-degree scope, which is essentially look at the center of the screen and follow your trajectory from the center of the screen, what you find is if you do that with an angle scope, you'll often bump into tissue as you go in. So I always use the very, very lowest part in the center of the image to guide me, and that's my forward eye, if you like, so that I can avoid touching other surrounding structures. But there's no escape from not knowing your anatomy, of course. It's extremely important, and even more so with angle scopes, to understand your anatomy carefully so that you know exactly where your stapes superstructure is, you know exactly where your facial nerve is. So when you're going in with your scope, you don't damage those structures. And practice, as you say, makes perfect. And I definitely recommend everyone to come on one of your courses, because that's working on cadaveric tissue is where you learn how to use these techniques safely.
Yes. The other thing I find that, you know, in angle scope is that sometimes you go in and then your tip of the scope is closer to the stapes than you imagine.
Yeah.
With a 0-degree scope, at least you have a much wide angle view. Having said that, I think with practice makes it perfect, as you say.
Yeah.
Start off with something very simple, like a posterior perforation, and then graduate on to cholesteatoma, and then gradually move on to the use of a angled endoscope and maybe powered instrumentation. But there is no sort of, you know, no point in rushing into something. Avoid complications, and patient safety is paramount. But maybe go and watch somebody like Owen or, you know, me or somebody operating. And that gives us a lot more insight. Okay. I think thank you very much, Owen, for your time. And hopefully we'll find it. This podcast will be useful for the viewers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And hope to catch up soon, Aaron.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheerio.
Thank you very much to Aaron and I and Owen Judd. I think we've got a much better understanding now of the use of lasers in the middle ear, particularly for cholesteatoma, and angled endoscopes in terms of endoscopic ear surgery, and how that can improve your view while minimizing the removal of healthy tissue. So I hope you'll join us next week when we will be here listening to Sean Carey and Jonathan Joseph, and they'll be discussing local anesthetic in rhinological surgery.